Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 69, recorded September 12th, 2012. Hans-Peter Brondmo. Triangulation is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and use the offer code Triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get to talk to some of the best and most interesting people in the technology industry. I love this show. It's me. It used to be me and Tom Merritt. That was the three of Triangulation. But now it's me and you in the chat room. And our third leg of the stool, if you will, is today Hans-Peter Brondmo. I met Hans-Peter in Norway at the Nordic Light Festival.
Yeah.
It's great to see you again.
Good to see you.
Entrepreneur. In fact, his company, Plum, was sold to Nokia in, what, 2009? A few years ago.
3 years ago, 3 days ago.
3 years and 3 days ago. And unlike a lot of entrepreneurs who get sold to a big company, you stuck around.
Yep.
Why?
You know, I spent a couple of years taking the stuff we developed at Plum and kind of making it a platform, a social platform infrastructure at Nokia.
What was Plum?
We used to call it, you know, Facebook for your family. It was a kind of Facebook groups before Facebook groups. It was a small group communications and sharing platform, which we've now integrated in with our location assets, so it becomes a way for people to have private conversations and share information where location is a big part of what they're doing.
Right.
So I did that, and then this great guy I work for, Michael Halber, who now runs our location business, came to me and said, you know, you're good at the startup thing. Why don't you try to do some startups internally at Nokia?
That is what I found so interesting when we talked in Norway. The idea that a big company could have smaller startups inside it. And you said it's treated just like a startup in terms of results and funding.
Yeah, in many ways. I mean, we kind of seed fund these things, right? We have a bunch of people who come up with ideas, and we give them, you know, 6 months to try to prove that there's something there, maybe develop some prototypes, a business case, et cetera. And then we try to pick, you know, a few of them and say, you can take it to the next level. Give, you know, put them through the ringer and give them an A round. And one of my first projects just got an A round a couple of months ago. Very exciting project.
Now, what happens if they don't make it? They just go off.
Well, that's kind of, you know, the beauty of it is you don't necessarily lose your job and out on the street if you don't make it. Sometimes they even do it, you know, alongside their main day job. But on the other hand, you know, if you're a startup, you can become Instagram, or, you know, at least 12 people can become Instagram and make $1 billion. You know, that's probably
so they get to participate in the success of it financially?
Well, so, you know, we don't talk too publicly about exactly how we structure it internally, but you know, there are incentive mechanisms. Yeah.
That's really cool. I mean, Google certainly tries to do that. They try to stay entrepreneurial. It's very difficult. It's the innovative's dilemma. You get successful at something, and then you get frozen in stone because anything else will risk the business.
Yeah.
So, but especially in technology, a company has to keep moving to survive. Nokia is in a very challenging position right now. It was dominant as a cell phone company, and suddenly along comes Apple in 2007, and then now Google. And it's just become very challenging. And companies like RIM and Nokia that were the incumbents are now very challenged.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Nokia, one of the things I like about the company, and also being Norwegian myself and growing up with Nokia tires on my dad's car, you know,
Nokia tires?
Oh, yeah. Nokia was in the paper business.
They were
in
tire
the,
company?
In the rubber business.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We did tires. We did consumer. We did stereos, home electronics.
Wow.
And then only in the, you know, 80s and early 90s did the mobile phone thing really start happening.
Was it primarily Finnish or was it Scandinavian?
Finnish.
It was
Finnish. Nokia's a Finnish company.
But, I mean, did it have a Scandinavian
back
presence?
Then, not really as
just
a business. You know, you could buy the products. But
right.
So snow tires, great snow tires from Nokia. So, you know, the DNA, the makeup of Nokia is one of reinvention. And that's kind of what I like about it as well. People are, you know, the Finns wouldn't be alive if they weren't survivors, right? It's
right.
So cold up there. So, you know, the whole DNA of the population, of the people, is to reinvent and to recreate. And, you know, we're in the middle of kind of an incumbent cycle right now, right? Where the challenger cycle, where
right.
you know, we're no longer the incumbent in the space, we're a challenger. And, right. and it's, you know, super interesting, right? Because, you know, I was listening to, you know, the announcement, which I won't refer to, but that some people might have heard of this morning.
You could say and, the Apple. Well, maybe you're not allowed to.
I forgot the name of the company.
But, some company out in Cupertino announced something.
And you know, what was interesting to me is that I was sitting there reflecting on thinking, you know, if you want to think different these days.
It's very hard.
You don't buy Apple.
Right.
If you think different, you buy Lumia.
Right. Well, thinking, I don't know. Maybe.
Of course, right? That's the difference. Everybody's going out and you know, getting all excited about
That's
I can buy
point.
Yet another Apple. And you know, and frankly, what I saw this morning was kind of incremental. It wasn't that exciting to me. And so if you really want to think different, you know, go buy a yellow phone. But go buy a great Lumia with a phenomenal camera and kind of all the new stuff that we're offering.
But maybe smartphones have become like computers, kind of established. We're going to fix your mic here just a little bit. Have become kind of established like computers have, and it's harder to do something new and fresh and different because it's kind of a mainline business now. It's no longer, or is it, you think, possible to become?
You know, I think there's a lot of innovation still to happen in the space, no doubt. But I also think, you know, back to kind of the work that I'm doing and the reason we're running these startups internally is that, you know, we think that there's a huge amount of innovation, a huge amount of new stuff that can happen. Which isn't necessarily even, you know, the phone form factor. There's a whole new bunch of new types of devices, connected devices, smart devices, in all different kinds of form factors that we're looking at. You know, obviously, as a part of the location business, you know, we have 90% penetration in the in-car navigation market. So 9 out of 10 cars run Nokia's, you know, content and software.
It's not Avimaps. It's Nokia owns, is it Telenav or Navstar?
We bought Navtech, several years ago.
Right.
Yeah. So our location platform, you know, is the world's largest location platform by all measures.
People might see Navtech on their screen, but it's a Nokia.
Exactly.
Company.
Yeah. That's yeah. And so it's a part of our location business unit, location and commerce business unit.
Everybody's always said the Nokia maps are the best.
Yeah, they're great.
Incredible,
you know, global coverage, almost 200 countries where we have.
But even,
you know,
the features like the 3D and all of that, they look great.
Great 3D, and you know, it's also cool is if your phone actually goes offline, which, you know, occasionally it drops a line, the maps keep on working because it's a different technology. It's vector based maps, so it can render a map whether you're in a tunnel or you're off in the woods. The maps render just fine.
So this is a challenge because Apple just kind of came out of nowhere. Android's taken up all the low-end market, and Nokia may have superior technology. You've certainly got the best cameras in any phones out there. These maps probably are the best maps out there. I think Windows Phone 8 and Windows Phone 7, the Lumia is a fantastic phone.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get much respect. Why?
Well, I think we have to put it in perspective, right? Windows Phone is a challenger in a market, and it's a challenger that's actually growing faster than both iOS and Android did in the comparable place in their life cycle, right? So we've sold more devices, you know, a year
doubled
into it
faster
than the others have, right? So in that regard, you know, by those metrics, we're doing really well. By absolute metrics in terms of total market size, yeah, we've got a lot of catch up to do. But the good news is that, you know, there is some sentiment of, you know, looking for something a little bit new and fresh.
Right.
And I think that, you know, as again, if you want to think different today, go, you know, go think Nokia. So I think the Lumias offer that. And I, to your point, I think WinPhone is a very fresh and exciting new approach.
Everybody agrees it is.
Yeah.
But there's the sense of it's too late.
Well, you know, what Apple had $150 million left in the bank back
right.
in about a decade ago, right?
Right?
And was it too late? It's never too late.
Never
I mean, and
late.
Again, we used to make paper, right?
Right.
I mean, the company will. I feel very confident with the new management team and leadership. You know, I've been here for 3 years now. I've seen a lot of change,
right?
And you know, with Elop at the helm, I think, you know, we've got a lot of change happening, and it's to me it's very exciting because it's much more fun to be kind of in a real battle where you're seeing
right.
the change and you can influence the change than necessarily kind of being on autopilot and just stamping out a new device every 15, 18 months.
So let's talk about location because that's your particular area. How does location change all this? You know, we were talking on the previous show, we do a show about Google, about mobile and how important mobile is. And the question came up, is the iPad mobile? You know, Mark Zuckerberg said the iPad's not a mobile device. It is, in a way, just the next computer.
Yeah.
It's the phone that's mobile. And
yeah.
I guess GPSs are mobile. And
yeah.
So Is location and mobile, are those two sides of the same coin?
Well, I think location is a very important part of the mobile experience, right?
Right.
Kind of is almost like a truism. And I think, you know, if we look at what we're doing with WinPhone, you know, our ambition there, and I think we're well on our way to achieving it, is to make it the most location-friendly mobile device, right? Ultimately, we'd like people to feel like they're a local everywhere they go, right? So if you're in New York City, you want to feel like a local. The WinPhone experience, powered by our location infrastructure, our location platform, our maps, our places infrastructure, all of the pieces you need to pull together, and then our suite of apps, you know, for navigation, for discovery, for social activity and sharing, all of that stuff. You know, City Lens, really cool app. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's basically this ability to kind of, you know, look around and have an augmented reality experience and discovery through your camera, you know, on the phone. So you move it down like this. It's a map. You see a map. You move it up and you see the real world
through
the lens. Very cool stuff. So, you know, this will basically give you the access to, you know, right where you are, all the information around you. And to your point, you know, I don't carry an iPad with me in any different way than I carry a notebook. I actually don't carry an iPad.
Right.
I carry a
big
laptop, and I carry a Lumia. Right? That's kind of my mix.
Right. And you leave the laptop in the hotel room, and the Lumia is what you walk around with.
Yeah.
So you're working. Your entrepreneurial efforts at Nokia are really not for products that are coming out today or tomorrow. You're working in the future,
next generation. Yeah.
So what does that look like? How is that different?
Well, you know, here's one thing I can say about it. I think that we are getting kind of attached to a certain form factor. There's kind of like, there's the sort of small growing larger, medium and large, right? So you got the pads, which are basically kind of the medium form factor, and then. I think you're going to see a lot of different variations on that theme. You're going to see different types of form factors, different types of experiences. And I mean,
not just a phone, not just something that size.
Yeah, I think, you know, the sort of honey, I shrunk the computer approach.
Which is really what a smartphone is.
Yeah. I mean, Android is really, to me, kind of, you know, about is a computer that
it's
was
a
kind
Linux
of
computer.
It's a Linux computer on and even, you know, sort of the whole app metaphor of thing. It was taken from, you know, if you think about, I had a 128K Mac in 1984 and I ordered it in February when it was first announced in 1984. Right. I loved it. It's a great machine. But it was really, you know, 20 years later, when the first iPhone was introduced, it was kind of exactly the same thing. It was closed. Remember that in the beginning? There was no apps. There was only the apps. It was small, and it had the original Mac had a mouse, which was a great paradigm for interaction.
The new one
had touch.
Yeah.
And so it was sort of the same thing repeated, done even better than the first time, and it's great. But I think there's a lot of room for, you know, new paradigms. And I think one of the things we're going to start seeing kind of in the Internet of Things vein is we're going to start seeing more special purpose devices that are brilliant at doing kind of one thing, but still being programmable, being smart, doing that one thing really well. So I think there's going to be, you know, really, I mean, if you look at things like that Pebble watch, you know, and some of
isn't that cool?
Very cool. Or you look at the Nest, you know, the thermostat. I think these are great innovations where, you know, you have a dedicated device, clearly a smart device connected to the internet. Same with this little you know, watch. It's connected to, in this case, your local phone, and it provides a whole bunch of really interesting functionality connected to, you know, your smartphone. But
increasingly, these aren't phones. I mean, we use these less and less as phones, don't we? They really are computers in your pocket. And in fact, we could probably stop calling them phones and start. I mean, and they don't have to be tied to phones. It could be a thermostat. It could be.
But I think there will be. You know, this is kind of like the battleship. But there's a whole armada of additional. So this is the aircraft carrier. It's the big sort of mothership that sits in the middle.
Do I want a bunch of devices? I mean.
I think you do.
I don't mind that.
I think you'll find that you do. Just like, you know, today you have this big thing. But what, you know.
The laptop he's talking about.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm pointing to the laptop here.
But thank you.
And, you know, you have a laptop. You have a smartphone. You know, you might have an earpiece. I think
you got the fuel band. That's a computer, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's location aware. It's movement aware. It knows what time it is.
Microcontroller. It talks. It uses your phone or your computer.
The phone is the battleship, isn't it? And that's part of the armada.
Exactly. So I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, speakers, obviously. You know, have you seen the Jambox?
Yeah.
really cool little device, right? And again, it's a Bluetooth connection. Boom. It becomes a speakerphone. It becomes an extension. Now, this is a speakerphone. You could ask, well, why do I need a speakerphone? Well, because it's better. It's better sound. It's more general purpose. It's specialized for speakerphone. So it has noise cancellation. It has a lot of things that you just can't put in a phone easily. And eventually the phone will catch up, but there'll always be, you know, there'll be these special purpose, I think, devices that'll really be breaking the barriers. And so that's a, I think, a really exciting area at large.
And they'd all be connected. Maybe they'd be connected to a hub that's your phone, but they might be connected to something else.
Yep.
They'd be smart. I keep waiting for medical devices, you know, for medical monitoring and that kind of thing. I mean, this is we're talking about the Nike Fuel Band is an early version of such a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been looking at the medical space.
What if it could do blood chemistry, blood pressure?
Exactly.
Heart rate.
And it you know, it's not, we're not far away. There's a little startup I ran across a little while ago that has a little radar that you can, that can actually penetrate your skin. Supposedly in a harmless way. But it so you can actually wear it and get an imprint of your heart. You can start seeing things in terms of so we're not far away from you know, the augmentation stuff being very powerful.
And then that raises the issue, we were talking about this also on Twig, of privacy. You know, there's in California there's a privacy group that wants Google to have a privacy policy on its autonomous cars because well, they know where you are. People are becoming more and more aware of that, and are perhaps some people, not me so much, maybe not so much our audience, but some people are very nervous about the idea of these things knowing where we are and knowing a lot about what we do and monitoring us. Do you consider that? Do you worry about
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. I think the privacy, the whole privacy space, we're just kind of on the cusp of it in terms of, you know, what it will mean to know, you know, who and what you are. I this is a little bit dating myself a little bit here, but about 12 years ago, I testified at a Senate hearing on privacy, and I presented a concept that I called I called it your electronic soul, and I said, you know, as your digital footprint gets known, and as you have predictive technologies that can read it, et cetera, you end up having sort of this almost like the second self, which is this digital representation of who you are. So there's
your
who
ghost.
You really are, and then it's your ghost.
Yeah,
exactly.
Your data ghost.
Your soul. And my statement basically said, look, ultimately, this data asset that becomes your representation is an incredibly valuable asset. And there's three primary forces vying for access to that asset, right? Besides yourself wanting to control it, there's, you know, the shady characters and the deep dark corners of the internet, right? So the hackers and the crackers. There's the government wanting access to your personal information, and then there's corporate interests wanting access to your
marketers.
Information. And yet we don't have a clear kind of asset model today that says, well, who owns and controls this asset?
You know, we don't even know that we own it.
We don't. Yes, exactly. We don't today. Technically, legally, we don't. So I think the interesting opportunity.
I mean, I think
here
everybody would assume that we own it, but it's not. There is no legal.
No, if you have information that you've deposited, sort of a representation of yourself that's in a database at some corporate.
Who owns that? Not you.
You don't own it.
You
might have rights when you enter into a privacy statement that says that you can have it deleted.
Right.
But what we really need is this is a little bit futuristic here, but what we really need is a representation where you say, look, I'm going to keep depositing my personal information with Amazon. But if Amazon doesn't give me a return on that deposit, I don't mean money, but I mean kind of service, I mean recommendations, I mean the things I want, I will have the right to withdraw it and deposit it with the competition or keep it
myself.
That
would be huge. Is that doable?
I think it is. I think it's a put the man on the moon kind of doable, but I think it's doable.
Before this decade is out, you will be able to get your data out of Facebook.
Don't you wish you'd heard that at the National Democratic or Republican convention?
That's exactly right, because I'm giving Facebook all this information. I'm giving Twitter all this information.
Yeah.
And basically, once it's there, it's theirs.
Yeah.
It may have come from me. They may even have language that says, oh, you have the right to blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, that's their database now. It's not my database anymore.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if I could just pull it right out? In Europe, they're fighting over this right to be forgotten.
Right.
But this would be better. Not forgotten, just I control who has that asset.
Yeah. Think of it as like, you know, you go to a bank, you deposit your money. The bank doesn't give you a good interest on the money. You take it out and you put it to the other bank, give it to the other bank. And you have a diversified portfolio. You have a little bit of money there, some stock over here. Maybe you own your house. And so... you know, similarly, and that's an asset model, right? We own our financial assets. We control them. We have legal protections around them. You know, I believe, and this is a, you know, this is Hans Peter speaking, not necessarily Nokia speaking here, but, you know, the testimony that I made back then, and I, you know, worked on it a little bit later, it was really about this sort of that we need a framework. We need a way to think about personal information. And when you start looking at things like, you know, constantly tracking and monitoring where you are, et cetera, you know, very valuable to the consumer if used right. But also, you know,
we want to give that information
concerning if abused.
To Google and to Facebook, but we're concerned about what they might do with it, and we're concerned about loss of the control. Yeah. 12 years later, we are no closer to that model. But what we are more aware of 12 years later is what a problem it is.
Yeah.
I think that there's not a consumer alive now who doesn't understand that when they get that club card at the grocery store or they give information to Facebook that it's being used in a way, using against them, and yeah. they've given up control of it completely.
Well, then think about things like, you know, DNA sequencing, right? Think about when, you know,
oh,
when
yeah. it's just beginning.
You know, and then apply some predictive logic to that. And it's like, well, you've got an X percent, you know, chance of developing the following illness
right.
in the next decade. You know, what's the insurance company want to, you know, what do they want to do with that? And what might that mean for the insurance company to access that without you maybe even knowing? So, I mean, there are large numbers of very complex and thorny issues, which at the next Democratic and Republican conventions,
let's
I'd like to hear
talk about.
About
it. Yeah,
exactly.
No kidding. I think we are becoming aware of it. We have a lot of conversations about the trade-off, for instance, and we're talking about tracking cookies a lot, the trade-off between, well, I want to use these free services, and they need to get some value in return, but at the same time, there's a lot of concern, and completely, I don't dismiss it, completely legitimate concern about but privacy, about, you know, well, but I want to control what they know about
yeah.
me.
And it, you know, it is, you know, I said put the man on the moon, but it is... And it is a little bit like that. I mean, this is an infrastructure problem. This is a national infrastructure problem, and we need to build an infrastructure for people to be able to do this.
Framework? Where does this come from?
I think we do. I think we need. You know, an asset can only really be represented as an asset if there's a legal framework that supports it, that gives you, you know, rights to the asset and legal rights to the assets, et cetera. So I think ultimately we need a legal framework.
Yeah, I mean, our Constitution doesn't even have privacy in it, so. We have laws, but we need to perhaps become more clear about that. And unfortunately, the tension that goes on right now is between regulators who want to regulate this stuff
yeah.
and in some ways kill innovation through that regulation
yeah.
and companies like Google and Facebook who want to innovate and I think must ultimately recognize that in order for them to go forward, they need to have something in place.
Yeah, and I'll give you a great example of some of the, you know, one of the innovations we're doing at Nokia. We have an app now, you know, our Drive app on the Lumia phones, on the Windows phone, which has this My Commute feature. And, you know, you could argue on the one hand that that's tracking where you're going every day. You can turn it off, in which case we don't do that.
Right.
But if you allow it to figure out where you're going, it'll make every morning when you get in your car, it'll say, you know, today you want to avoid this particular road, and we'll give you a new alternative because
right.
it just knows what your commute
right.
is. And so you know, I think there's a lot of room for innovation. It's a small little feature that makes a huge difference if you're like me commuting from San Francisco to Sunnyvale, you know, four or five times a week. You know, if you can save me 10 minutes per day on that commute, you save me an hour a week.
Right.
You know, that's 2 days in a year, 52
right.
weeks in a year. You've saved me 2 days of my life.
Right.
You know, that's meaningful time,
yes.
right? And I
right.
can spend it with my family, with my friends, you know, or sleeping
right.
10 more minutes.
I take the sleeping myself.
Yeah.
We're talking to Hans Peter Brodmo. He is, your title is Director of Innovation?
I am Head of Innovation.
Head of Innovation.
In our Location and Commerce.
In Location and Commerce at Nokia Corporation. We're going to go to the chat room just a little bit if you've got questions for Hans Peter. Please ask away. We'll talk to him in some more in just a bit. But first, I want to tell you about a very good innovation that's been around for about 10 years called Stamps.com. This is so cool. It means you don't have to go to the post office anymore. You can print out legal U.S. postage using your computer, your printer, no special inks, no postage meter. just stamps.com. In fact, it gets better than that because you're not just printing stamps. You're printing right on the envelope. You're printing all the information you need. If you've got a QuickBooks database, you're printing your invoices, your business stuff from the QuickBooks database and the postage onto the envelope. If you've got if you're an eBay or an Amazon seller, oh, this is awesome. It takes all the information about the buyer, prints out the mailing labels, prints out the postage. You even get a USB scale. It'll mail that package, so you're always using exactly the right postage. I want you to visit stamps.com and try it out right now. Wait a minute. You see that $80 special offer? No, no, we can do better. Click the radio microphone that you heard about on a podcast to type triangulation. Look, it's already typed in there for you. Triangulation, because we've typed it a few times. And press go. $80? No, it's a $110 bonus offer. $55 in free postage. A free digital scale. You just pay shipping and handling. $5 supply kit and a four-week trial of stamps.com. You don't even have to get up and mail the package. The mail carrier comes to you on their regular rounds or schedule free pickups. Stamps.com. They've got discounts you can't get at the post office. Up to 21% on express mail. 15% on priority mail. It's just great all around. You will save money with Stamps.com. Find out more. Go to Stamps.com. Click the microphone in the corner there and use the offer code, promo code, triangulation. And we thank them so much for their support of triangulation. Kingy wants to know about 4G. So LTE, has the rollout been slow in Europe compared to here?
You know, that's not a topic I know anything about.
So we'll leave that for another
There's some questions about the WinPhone 8 SDK that I saw.
You know, that's got to be driving you guys crazy. Well, because Microsoft has not put out that SDK. The Windows Phone 8 is coming out soon. In fact, the rumor, I don't know if you probably can't confirm it, is that we'll, by November, be seeing the 920.
I think what we're saying is by end of year.
End of year.
I think that's the official.
But if you don't have any developers with an SDK, that's a problem. You guys must have the SDK.
Yeah. We've got great apps so that we're developing for it. So, you know, look, it again, you know, when the first iPhone came out, it took quite a while for
there were no apps at all for the first 6 months.
And they took quite a while for that to happen and to mature.
Right.
And you know, I recognize that it's an issue. It's obviously, you know, we need to talk to Microsoft specifically about it to get the full story. But I think, you know, there should be no question in anybody's mind that Microsoft is more committed to developers than probably anybody else. They have a long history of it. So certainly they're quite aware and working incredibly hard.
And I think what it's interesting that you're saying is that it's not too late. I think there's definitely the perception, and it's because we're all very short-sighted. Tech journalists are very short-sighted. Oh, no, it's over. We got Android, we got iPhone. Thanks anyway. We don't need you. But you're saying it's not over.
It's not over. And, you know, just a little detail that people might not be aware of. Last quarter, we sold 84 million phones.
That's a few.
So, yeah. you know, people...
How many smartphones, though?
You know, I don't know exactly what the breakdown was.
You know what's
was.
Frustrating? I love Nokia smartphones. The E71 was amazing.
Yeah.
I've owned Nokia phones for years, and you didn't make the carrier deals, and I was buying them unlocked, but most people aren't going to buy them unlocked.
Right.
And so you got a little bit behind in the smartphone market, but Symbian was amazing. Migo, I loved. I mean, you've done a lot of great stuff.
You know, it speaks to you know the power of Nokia as an innovation machine, right? We've done a lot of innovation, and I think there's no doubt. And now in partnership with Microsoft for the smartphone market, we're redirecting a lot of our innovation. I saw a question here about software and why aren't we innovating more in software? We're actually doing a ton of interesting stuff in software. Our location platform maybe being the biggest example of that right now, but. You know, I think the innovation that we have done, like you said, with Migo, with our other phone OSs have been phenomenal. You know, and I take issue with the horrible OS thing. I think you know people like to kind of rag on Microsoft because that's kind of what people do. But I really think that the Windows Phone, you know, 8 OS is a fresh OS. It's
right.
I mean, I obviously use it as my primary OS now, although, right. You know, I try out all the different OSs and all the phones. And I honestly think it's the freshest, most interesting and innovative thing out there right now.
I would agree with you, and I think most tech journalists would agree with you. But there's the issue of apps. There's the issue of availability. Unfortunately, is the issue of carriers not you know, you go into a Verizon store or an even an AT&T store, they're not going to push the Windows phone.
It depends on where you are in the world. If you're in Italy, you're actually seeing a huge pickup. And you know, so in Russia, we're seeing great. And you know, many countries where you're seeing great pickup, and then other countries where it's just taking longer. And,
right.
And I actually stopped by a store close by here just last week and went in just to get a feel for the thing. And I was... You know, I was discouraged. I asked the guy, and where's your Lumia? And he had one, but you know, we didn't do a great enough job getting it out there. But I think, and then I started asking him questions, and he, you know, he knew a little bit, but so I took a chance to educate him and show him what he really should be showing.
Good.
So it's hand to hand combat, right? We're gonna be out there, and we're gonna be in. You know, we have a great program where actually our employees go out into stores. And encourage the stores to kind of really understand what it is they're selling and what they've got, and that's working. It's working every time that happens. You know, we get great pickup, and the employees in the stores really enjoy it because they see, you know, they see that we care, which we really do. We want to, you know, we're going to be the comeback kid here.
Was there a little cheering when Apple beat Samsung in that lawsuit? Because one of the things that came out is that Microsoft had cross-licensed with Apple, and they'd said, we're not going to copy, and we're going to cross-license their patents. And it made me feel like, oh, Windows Phone is safe. And we're not going to see any lawsuits against Windows Phone. There must have been a little bit of cheering.
You know, look, we have a phenomenal IP portfolio.
We've
been doing this longer than anybody else.
Yeah.
We're not worried. We're looking at it, of course, observing it. But you know, other than that, you know, we've got no comment.
Yeah.
About
it's that. Nice to be a non-combatant in a war like that one, because it's a war of attrition. It's a war neither side's going to win. Yeah. It's just ugly. Yeah. And then wait till Google gets involved, and then it's just going to be a mess. Actually, that may be your big opportunity, frankly. If all these people are encumbered by each other and all the lawsuits, that's a huge opportunity. So let's talk some more about location, because I'm just fascinated by that. That has, you know, clearly mobile is the future of computing.
Yeah,
I mean, people will probably always have some form of desktop and tablet and so forth, but mobile is where everything interesting is happening right now. There's just no question about it. And one of the things that makes mobile so interesting is the fact that you're somewhere.
Yep.
And the device knows where you are.
Yeah, totally.
So tell me some more. For instance, I know Eric Schmidt said this was a little creepy. You'll be walking down the street and your phone will say you need a new pair of pants, and there's a good pair to be had right here. Are you talking about stuff like that?
Yeah, what was that Tom Cruise movie where, you know, where the advertisement on the wall?
Oh, I hate that stuff. Yeah. Hey, Tom Cruise or whatever. Yeah.
But you know, look, I think there's been sort of the Starbucks coupon example or
that's
variants
overdone.
Thereof have been been going on for a long time. But what's really interesting to me is that, you know, your phone has rich context about, you know, who you are, where you are, and what's around you.
Right.
And the combination of all of those and who's around you as well, of course. The combination of all of those are huge. And there's enormous unlocked, you know, potential that it's yet not been unlocked in that space.
And I'm sure, driving your teams to be really creative.
Yeah, think about the sensors that exist in a phone already, right? You've got, you know, you mentioned the pedometer and the sort of motion sensor here. You've got location, of course. Uh-huh. You got motion sensors. You've got, you know, gyros, so you can figure out orientation and speed. You got compass. And then a you know, pretty strong computational platform. And then in the cloud, you have, you know, we run this, we call it the NLP, the Nokia Location Platform, which is a rich set of services that allow you to both, you know, collect that information and make sense of it, and then provide feedback back to the local device. And I think if you look at it, you know, if you look at the car, if you look at the mobile wearable, it's a kind of an, you know, and again, it's a wide open space. What I think starts getting interesting is when, you know, one of the things we think about with CityLens, with our augmented reality, is where the phone can help you see what the eye can't see. So think about that. It's kind of like it becomes a little bit of sort of this radar vision where you can watch through the phone, and then all of a sudden you can see things that they're like X-ray vision. You can see things that, so you can, for example, one of the things we're doing is we're making models of cities by driving these little funny cars with the photo taking and something we call LIDAR.
So you're doing
laser
kind of street view stuff.
Oh yeah, we have.
But you're doing 3D modeling.
We're doing 3D modeling. So we're creating 3D models, and so our real
goal.
Is that
in Europe only, or is that in the U.S. too? Is it everywhere?
It's everywhere. Yeah, we're driving these cars around, you know, in Europe and in the U.S.
This is your problem, Hans-Peter. You got to get the word out. Nobody
that's why
knows
I'm
you're
here
doing
to talk
this
to you.
Stuff.
But here's what's cool about that, right? If you think about what happened, you know, what Google did with the web is they kind of made the web computable, right? They made it searchable. And then, you know, Facebook has kind of done that for people. What we're doing that is making the real world computable. So we're basically saying, look, we're going to have 3D models so that you can basically search, discover. If I look at something, I actually have a 3D model of that thing I'm looking at right there. And I have information about it. I might have historical information. And we're building those models, those 3D models of, you know, the world around you.
And you have an API. It's not just end users.
Exactly. That's what the Nokia location platform is all about.
You have a big API. Yeah. And now with Google starting to charge for Google Maps and stuff, I think there's probably a big opportunity for Nokia with its API. How much of what
Well, and keep in mind that our API, our location service, is increasingly powering Bing and the Microsoft Maps.
That's right.
It's powering Yahoo, right?
Yep.
It's available as an SDK for Amazon Kindle.
Oh, interesting.
So our, and of course on all the Windows phones, our API is available there. So just by, and there's lots of other stuff in
this
the wings
stealth,
that we can't talk about.
This is going to be the stealth map.
There's two, you know, robust map platforms out there, and the number one platform with global footprint is the Nokia platform.
Very interesting. How much of what you do? How do you balance between third-party independent software developers and stuff that you do in-house? Do you decide to do stuff in-house as examples, as reference? Do you think that maybe perhaps you guys understand better than anybody what to do with the API? How much of it do you say, okay, we want to find somebody to do the next Foursquare?
Look, as an innovation guy, I'm always humbled by the long tail, right? Like the amount of innovation that two guys can come up with in a garage.
It's amazing.
So clearly, you know, we're not going to win if we don't make our APIs, our platform, our core services. You know, we can do the industrial scale stuff, drive the cars through the street, fly the airplanes, do the satellites, all the stuff that costs hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, you need to build a content base and the services on top of that. But the cool, you know, the next little Foursquare, the next little kind of cool application that's going to pop up somewhere, that's going to happen in the long tail somewhere. You know, a couple of guys just graduated from some clever college in China, in Boston, and wherever it might be in the world, and in Helsinki for that matter, they're going to come up with that new idea.
How do you convince them that Nokia is the place to go?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, clearly...
It's a challenge.
You know, for me, the bar... That we're discussing, and for me, the sort of the line I always toe is, if it's not brain dead simple from a business logic, and you know, both from a business logic and from a technical standpoint to use our APIs, we're losing. You have to if you're thinking about this rationally, not you know if you're emotionally attached to one brand or the other, but if you're rationally thinking about what makes sense, we need to make sense relative to the you know everybody that's out there, and that's our bar. And we're making great progress in meeting that bar.
And I unfortunately, if you're an Apple or a Google, you may not have that. You may say, well, we're just the biggest, and they'll figure out how to use us. So one way to come onto a developer is say, look, this is going to make sense. It's easy. It's orthogonal. It's sane. They're still going to ask the question, but where am I going to make the most money?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So you need to have a financial incentive model. It needs to be free at the outset, right? You need to be able to come in, and free is certainly you know the basic starting point for everything today. But also at some point, when you start building a very successful business, you know we expect you to become a customer and not a freeloader, right?
Right.
But as far as the whole long tail, you know anybody who wants to run an experiment should be able to run that very easily, and that's where we've set our bar, and we're aggressively pursuing meeting that.
If you go to api.maps.nokia.com, you'll see it's a very rich set of features and things you can do. I didn't know about the LiDAR, though. That's really...
LiDAR is very cool. There's sort of two techniques. There's photogrammetry and LiDAR, and they complement each other. Right? Photogrammetry basically means extracting real 3D data and models from the photography. Right? So when you're using photography to capture this. And LiDAR is literally, it's a laser radar, right? It basically scans and creates huge amounts of data that we're collecting from these 3D models. And by combining the two and then overlaying the photography on top of the models as well and texture mapping it, you can do some. And then we do the top-down view also, both with LiDAR and photogrammetry.
It just seems like it's a... I guess it often is, but it's a positioning issue. It's getting the word out It's letting people know it exists. I mean, Maps is just one of many, I'm sure, products. But Maps is something where Nokia really stands head and shoulders above.
The other thing is, you know, that you think about with Maps is, you know, for Maps to be interesting, they got to be fresh. And you know, one of the things we talk about a lot internally, we got some really interesting work on, is if you think of the map that, you know, Columbus used to cross the big ocean,
yeah,
you know, to the extent he had a map, it didn't look that different from the maps we have today.
Right.
You know, so there hasn't been a whole lot of innovation on the map itself. It's right. Kind of this, you know, thing with lines on it, yeah, et cetera. Yeah. And sometimes it's overcrowded. There's too much information on it and you can't find your way. All the time. I think there's, you know, a ton of innovation that can happen in the models and how we interact with maps, how maps become much more live, how they come alive and become fresh and interesting and live. So there's a ton of interesting work and opportunity there, both for the developers and also for Nokia to not just be kind of a static, dull paper map that happens to be on your computer in sort of a digitized map, essentially, but to become a very live, highly scalable and fresh, you know, fresh map.
Do you think it's sufficient for, I mean, if you had, is it possible for a killer app to change everything? If you had the killer app on a Lumia 920, could it just change everything? People say, I have to have that phone.
You know, so this is giving me an opportunity to switch to one of my other favorite topics, which is photography.
Yes.
Right? And
that's
so,
how we met at Nordic Light.
Exactly. We're both photo buffs. And I think, and I use this as a bridge to photography because I think that there are things you can do both with the hardware and the software, of course. But look at what happened with Instagram. Everybody loves to, you know, to point to them as a great big success, and they were, you know, yeah, they were, yeah, a huge success, and they're growing still like weeds. But I had a great little anecdote. A friend of mine a few months ago told me the story where his daughter, I think she's 13 or 14 years old, was walking around one day, you know, downtown San Francisco, and she left her smartphone at home. And so she kept walking around and she kept looking at things and she kept doing this. And then she said, Insta. Insta. And she saw the world. So
I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, but you know, I actually think it's good because people are seeing the world in a different way. You know, these kids are learning to, they're learning to look at light. They're learning to look at, you know, capturing these moments.
They're framing everything.
And they're framing everything and saying, oh, that's interesting. It's, you know, it's an artistic expression. It's
a
way to sort of see more. So back to your question, can an app change everything? I think that certain things can really change the bar, and I, you know, I got to pull up my red phone here, right?
This thing is amazing. This is the 41 megapixel.
41 megapixels, and you know, some people look at this and say,
"The original PureView."
Yeah, this
phone
is the,
what is it?
80. This is called the PureView 808.
808.
Yeah. So this has the and we just released another PureView. PureView is, you know, really kind of a catch-all for our great imaging technology.
I was a little disappointed because I got all excited when I heard the 820 had PureView. I thought, 41 megapixels, here I come, but it's.
But you know what it has, though? It has optical image stabilization.
Which
in this,
is interesting.
In a form
it's got
factor,
springs on
it's,
the...
It's like, you know, I'm going to have a blue and a red. So it's about this thick,
yeah,
and it has optical image stabilization. So that means that, you know, if you're holding it in the dark, instead of getting, you know, you can hold it really still and even more still because, you know, you have optical image stabilization in there. So the low light performance is great. If you're filming videos, you know, the shakiness goes away.
Wow.
And it's in this tiny little package. So, you know, people aren't quite capturing that yet, but the optical image stabilization is going to change the way these pictures work. So I think stuff like that,
I agree.
You know,
that
can
could change
really
everything.
Change it.
Yeah.
And what people don't fully understand is, you know, 41 megapixel, if you took a picture that big off of this phone, you know, it fills up your computer or the cloud or whatever you're using pretty quickly. And you don't need 41 megapixels in order to create a great picture for viewing on the web. But what it gives you is a huge amount of flexibility around, like, you get zoom without a lens. You get lossless zoom just using, you know, using digital zoom.
Because you have enough pixels. And
so
that's one of the issues. It's why an iPhone can't really become a point and shoot because it's too thin.
Yeah.
And you can't zoom.
Exactly.
But you can if you have enough of a
with
sensor.
With this, plus computational techniques, our sort of filtering algorithms, our oversampling, and the amount of light you can get into one. There's a bunch of stuff that took these guys 5 years to develop the sensor. And it's a huge amount of super exciting technology that will allow and unlock. And then when you combine that with the new lens framework in Windows Phone 8, where you can basically write little apps that are lenses. They call them lenses.
Oh, neat.
So you go into the camera and you install a lens, and it does something really cool.
Right.
So you combine these things. I actually think we've got, you know, that plus, of course, the location assets. So all these pictures, they live in space, right? They live in the real world.
Right.
You have their orientation, everything else. You can map them, you know, put them on a map, put them in a 3D model, map them to a texture. So with all of that, I think we're getting to a point where there's something very exciting happening that, you know, you simply, you know, haven't seen before. And so, yes, I think there are single points like that. And I happen to think, you know,
photography might be
one of those where you're going to see kind of a lot of people making a choice saying, gosh, you know, Nokia has 100,000 apps for their phones. You know, how many can you install on a phone, right? At some point, you're getting diminishing returns. I think apps are important. You know, I'm not downplaying that. But, you know, we've grown from 7,000 to 100,000 in just under a year.
Now, that's Windows Phone 7. But will run Windows Phone 7 apps.
Yeah.
And then we got to get. By the way, I'm just playing with the 3D plugin on the Nokia Maps.
Yeah, isn't it cool?
I mean, this stuff that, you know, Google's now doing this. There's your house. Apple's now doing. But this, you've been doing this for a while. You were the first to really do this. It's just truly amazing. This is map data.
This is real time. So this is rendering real time, and this is with the plugin. But our latest release of this actually uses WebGL and does this stuff natively in the browser.
Wow, that's cool.
So you can just, that's what, you know, all browsers are going to support, WebGL. So you'll be able to render these. But, you know, these are real 3D models. You can actually dive right down and fly in it, and et cetera. It's very cool.
So I think really at this point it's a question. I mean, you've got a platform that I think is a very competent platform, certainly as good as anything out there. And I think some would make the argument a little bit more modern feeling, a little bit certainly snappy and lightweight. That's Windows Phone 8.
Yep.
You've got great hardware. I mean, the Lumia is a gorgeous phone.
Yep.
Absolutely gorgeous phone. You've got these cameras. You've got these maps. It's really now a question of getting the word out.
Yep. It's, you know, a lot of it's block and tackle. And then I think, you know, we're working hard on
fundamentals,
on the fundamentals, on getting, you know, I think we have the best industrial designers, the best, you know, guys,
I think
the materials,
yeah.
And also the materials we're using. There's some, you know, I've seen some of the stuff we're also doing kind of in more researchy stuff, you know, super cool material stuff happening, next generation there. You know, if you look at the 920, the screen kind of just bends around the corner, too. You know, you're starting to see these things fold around the corner. It gives you this, like, it's almost
that's
like floating in space.
It's
really beautiful.
Screen.
And, by the way, guess what? Comes from Finland. So what do you have to do? Be able to do?
What?
You have to be able to have your gloves on.
While
you use it.
How do they do that? It's not capacitive? They've
figured out, basically, how to use a regular glove and still be able to use the phone.
That's actually great.
And, by the way, you know, the other thing is, like, Apple made a lot of noise today about their new plug, right? It's smaller.
Right.
Well, with an Nokia, you don't need a plug.
I love the inductive.
You just drop it right down in an inductive charging. You just drop it on a little pad. It just charges.
It's fantastic.
You don't even have to plug it in.
And I want that pillow. The fat pillow.
Exactly. And they even have a speaker, actually. You can drop it on a speaker. And
I saw that.
Like, have you seen that little, like, helicopter landing pad thing?
Is it JBL? That's really neat. Yeah. They just put it on the speaker. It's charging. And it also is the speaker.
Yeah, and when you get close, it has this little, like, helicopter landing pad thing. So it kind of goes to show you where to land it. And you drop it down. Very cool. So, you know, stuff like that. You know, you add these things up one after a time. And it starts becoming, you know, I think, you know, it's the think different again. It's like, you know, everybody else is kind of just marching along, milking the cash cows, and we're, you know, through the hand we're currently dealt, we're really, I think, thinking different in a whole bunch of different areas.
And it speaks to exactly what you're doing with the innovation and with getting a more entrepreneurial spirit internally, so that that innovation can happen internally as well. Because I think that it's a handful of these little things that transform everybody's opinion.
Yep.
And suddenly you're the darling once again.
I don't think it takes much to sort of really start breaking through and getting people's attention and saying, oh, wow, we really got to pay attention here.
Yeah.
I've been very heartened by just how much in a very short period of time, how much, you know, it used to be Android and iPhone was kind of the only conversation.
Right.
And just I'd say in the last months, 2, 3, 4 months, nobody now writes something, you know, without saying it's now WinPhone.
Yeah, it's often regretful. Android. It's often, and WinPhone, which is great, but it's just not getting the traction it deserves, kind of a
But, you
a
know,
thing.
Again, keep in mind that at this point in their lifespan, the other phone platforms were behind us.
Right.
Right? So, so we're you know, nobody comes out of the gate and just instantly lives everywhere, right? It's hand-to-hand combat. We're
and
out there
if,
and
if we've learned anything, it's foolish to think it's over. It's never
not
over.
I don't care who's singing. It's not over.
By the way, I'm distracting myself by going up the road to Highway 101, driving to Petaluma from San Francisco.
Exactly. Let's see if we can look in the window over here.
I just think this is so cool. And is this mapping data everywhere? Because I just wandered off the map.
Yeah, no, the coverage is not global yet, but we have huge ambitions. Actually, partnering closely with Microsoft on a bunch of this stuff as well. We have huge ambitions to create very broad coverage for that.
Somebody asked, and I think that you this is probably predates your time at Nokia. If people at Nokia miss Ericsson as an arch rival, the fight in between the Finnish phone giants. Do you think
that what was that again? That,
does the people at Nokia miss having Ericsson to fight?
Oh,
they're still around, aren't they? Not really. No. Good old simple time, says Beatmaster. Well, it's really great to catch up with you again. I hear that you're going back to Norway next year for Nordic Light.
Oh yeah. I'll be. I'm actually on their advisory committee this year, and we're thinking about some really exciting new things to do up there.
Cool.
Which stay tuned on that one, because and we'll certainly talk to you about it.
We should talk, because that was so much fun, and Kristiansand is a really great place for a festival of any kind. Not just
I don't know if you saw the blog post I wrote on my blog bronmo.com, but it. It was so great. Bruce Davidson, Marilyn Mark.
Yeah.
I mean, to hang out with these legends, right? These guys who basically kind of have been inventing the art for the last 50 years. And, of course, now also seeing that in the context of these new things that are happening.
Right.
And, a lot of it driven by the mobile phones, of course.
Right.
But the interesting thing to me is that even the camera market continues to be a huge market with growth, an interesting movement, right? So I heard a statistic recently that in 2012, more pictures will be taken than the entire history of photography. And the first picture was taken in 1827.
I think that's right.
So in 185 years, this year, more pictures will be taken.
I think
that's
absolutely right.
We're at this clear, hockey stick point in the growth curve.
Right.
And I think it's really exciting what's happening.
Well, it's great to see you again. And we'll maybe see you in Kristiansand.
Look forward to it.
In the spring. Hans-Peter Brondmo, and your blog, brondmo.com.
Yep.
If people want to read more. I think it's pretty safe to say that whether you use an Android phone or an iPhone, or as I do, both, that everybody's rooting for Nokia and Windows. I'm rooting for Windows Phone 8. I really think the competition is great for everybody, and I think it's such a fresh look at what a mobile device can be that I think I'm really rooting for it. So when that 920 comes out, I'm going to be in line at AT&T, and I'm going to pick one up sometime later this year.
Yep.
Maybe sooner than later, I hope. We do triangulation, when we don't have Apple events, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesdays. I hope you'll tune in live. We really appreciate it. As you can see, the chat room is a huge help to me posing questions to our guests. But if you miss it, we do an on-demand version as well at twit.tv/TRI. This show will be up there along with all the previous 68 shows just in a few minutes. twit.tv/TRI. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Triangulation.